Hi, welcome back to Showrunners, part of the Sidious Mag podcast network. I'm your host, Scott Fauble, and today my guests are Wild Bill Willie Millum of Roots Running and Reed Fisher of Tin Man Elite. And today we're here to discuss what's in the box! What's in the box?
What's in the box?
What's in the box?
The thriller, Seven, starring Brad Pitt, Morgan Freeman, and Kevin Spacey. Welcome, guys. Welcome to the pod.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Willie, you got to talk louder.
Thanks for having me.
There we go. All right, quick synopsis for those who haven't seen it. You're going to be super lost because this is just a wonderful thriller with a great twist at the end, and we're going to be spoiling it. We're absolutely going to be spoiling it. If you haven't watched this movie, go watch the movie, come back to the pod. Quick synopsis, though. When retiring police detective William Somerset, Morgan Freeman, tackles a final case with the aid of newly transferred David Mills, Brad Pitt, they discover a number of elaborate and grisly murders. They soon realize that they're dealing with a serial killer, played by Kevin Spacey, who is targeting people he thinks represent one of the seven deadly sins. Somerset also befriends Mills' wife, Tracy, played by Gwyneth Paltrow, who is pregnant and afraid to raise her child in a crime-ridden city. This movie had a budget of $33 million, made $327 million at the box office, and got 81% on Rotten Tomatoes, so pretty well-received, both financially and critically. Roger Ebert, he loved it, 3.5 out of 4 stars. He said, he called it, as disturbingly graphic as I've seen in a commercial film. It is certainly not for the young or sensitive. And I just want to, just a side note, I watched this movie when I was like 12. It was just startling, just shaped my youth.
Way too much.
Yeah. Roger Ebert said, good as it is, it misses greatness by not quite finding the right way to end. All of the pieces are in place, all the characters are in position, and then I think the way the story ends is too easy, satisfying perhaps, but not worthy of what has gone before. Like, what the fuck? What are you talking about? Mm. How is this satisfying at all? Gwyneth Paltrow's head is in a box? I could not agree with the
shame on you,
yeah,
Robert.
The ending being satisfying.
I think he's a confirmed psychopath.
Yeah.
If he thinks that's a satisfying ending.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a hot take that I cannot get behind, Roger. I'm sorry. Wait, I know you're dead, but we have to disagree on this one.
Mm-hmm. One more thing. I don't think that's fair to say that's not how we wanted the ending to happen, because this is one of the most talked about endings, the twist.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, how is there more to be left?
Like, it is still memed regularly.
I know.
This movie's what, like 20-ish years old now?
More than that, yeah. 1993,
I
think.
Okay, so we're coming up on
94,
maybe.
95, I think.
And that, it's still relevant.
That's surprising that he feels that way.
Yeah, get out of here, Roger.
Anyways,
This movie didn't do too well in like the Oscars or the award categories. One notable award it did win, which I thought was funny, it won the MTV Movie Awards. Brad Pitt won Most Desirable Male.
I don't disagree.
Yeah. I mean, I agree. I just see that seems like an award that probably didn't survive the woke resolution.
Yeah, probably
no,
not.
Like, how do you... The most desirable female?
Pure objectification.
Yeah.
Yep.
But I'm glad it existed back then.
That's
I don't true. Understand how you give it to anybody other than Brad Pitt.
It's mm-hmm. true. That's really all it won?
That's probably why they
There were some other ones,
it.
Too. I just thought that was the funniest.
Yeah, Brad Pitt probably won it every year.
Every year.
Said, all right, we're just going to
give can't
give
this
one.
We can't give this out anymore. All right, let's get into this movie. My first thought, this movie is absolutely startling. Everything about it is just gut-wrenching. Mm-hmm. It's kind of a remember where you were when you first watched it kind of movie.
It's entirely from start to finish unsettling.
Yeah.
It's the whole thing.
Yeah, even the opening credits are
It's like, I don't want
like,
I don't
like
want to.
You're just going through these, like, it's like books and mm-hmm. things are getting highlighted and scratched out, and it's a bunch of stuff about like sexualization and fantasies and like it's bizarre. From the opening credits you're just like, this is gonna be an interesting watch.
Yeah, it's just foot on our throat from the very beginning.
Mm-hmm.
So this movie was directed by David Fincher, mm-hmm. and we're gonna run through some of David Fincher's movies. We've got Seven, 1994. These are just the highlights. He's done other ones too. Seven, 1994, Fight Club, 99, Zodiac, 2007, Benjamin Button, 2008, which doesn't seem to fit here.
Yeah, that's an outlier.
Social Network, Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, 2011, and then Gone Girl, 2014. Mindhunter is what he's working on currently, 2014. All right, What is his most fucked up movie? I think that's something we have to start with. You got Seven, Fight Club, Zodiac, Girl with the Dragon Tattoo.
Oh, they're all fucked up.
Or Gone Girl.
I think it's gotta be this or Girl with the Dragon Tattoo.
Yeah.
I don't think Fight Club... I mean, Fight Club's pretty fucked up.
Same as Zodiac.
Yeah, but Zodiac's not... I think that this is darker than
from
Zodiac.
From start to finish,
sure.
This is just like, it takes the cake with so many fucked up things.
Yeah.
Like, Girl with Dragon Tattoo has a terrible scene.
Yeah.
And then the other one that we just talked about.
The one that we're not supposed to talk about.
Zodiac's messed up too. Fight Club. Fight Club's like, it's fucked up in a different way.
Yeah.
We're not supposed to talk about.
And that's a good joke.
Yes.
I think it's Gone Girl. I really do.
Wait.
Really?
Elaborate
yeah.
on that.
Like, think about all the stuff that happens in Gone Girl. Like, she tricks a pregnant idiot, which just kind of hurts everyone's feelings that she called her that.
Mm-hmm.
But then it's like, fakes her own murder, is going to send her husband to the electric chair, fakes a rape, murders the shit out of Neil Patrick Harris,
mm-hmm.
comes back, and then gets herself impregnated. Like, the level of psychopathy, I think, in Gone Girl is the highest. That being said, Seven is a much harder watch.
Yeah.
I can rewatch Gone Girl. This one, it's like... You really gotta be in the right mood.
I
you gotta buckle up with Seven.
This one really shows you all the details, the nitty gritty details. Whereas Gone Girl is more of the surface level.
Yeah,
I
agree.
That you see.
Like Gone Girl
pattern.
Is more like psychologically harder to wrap your head around because it's not just like a serial killer, which is more. It's been done before. Whereas, Seven, it's just much more like grisly.
Mm-hmm.
You see all of the nuance of a serial killer rather than just like things happening behind the curtain and then. It's revealed later.
Yeah. Although in Seven, you don't see the thing you most want to see, kind of.
Which
like,
is?
I mean, not want to see, but like, he holds back the biggest reveal, which is Gwyneth Paltrow's head.
Mm-hmm.
You don't actually see into the box.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which I think was nice, because it makes us remember Gwyneth Paltrow as like this angel, as opposed to.
Which is important.
Yeah. She's so beautiful. No, I thought it was. You know, obviously, very disturbing.
Yeah.
David Fincher is very good at making you feel disturbed, I feel like.
Yeah.
And is it ever explicitly said that it's her head in the box? I think it's just heavily implied, isn't it?
There's no... Yeah, I think...
Like, we
just
see
just
based on Brad Pitt's reaction, but he's never like, you put my wife's head in a box, you crazy bastard.
And, I mean, I feel like Morgan Freeman could have said...
Yeah.
No, it's not. Don't worry.
Yeah.
It's someone else's head in the box.
But he didn't see it.
He just looks at him.
And he says,
like, oh, God.
He says, John Doe has the upper hand,
mm-hmm.
you know, which I think implies, like, there's some bad shit in the box.
Yeah, and he tells, like, the helicopter surveillance to wave off, like, get out of there.
Get out of here, California.
Yeah, so Fincher called this a meditation on evil, which I think is the scariest way to describe something.
Yep.
Yeah.
Just gonna sit with the evilness for a while. Let it come and go.
He said that after working on Alien, which is the movie he did previously, he'd rather die of colon cancer than make another movie. And then his next movie is Seven, which I thought was a funny thing to say.
Is he doing okay?
Financially, I'm sure he's doing
great.
Yeah. Yeah. He took a bunch of money from Netflix to make Mindhunter, so.
Which is also great.
Yeah. Speaking of the ending, here's a fun fact. The... ending where the head is actually in the box was almost not a thing. So the original, the studio didn't like it.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't want that to be in there. But when they were trying to convince Fincher to make the movie, they sent him the wrong script. They sent him the script with the head still in the box at the end. And he loved it. I also read multiple accounts that said Pitt read the head in the box ending and refused to make the movie unless that was the actual
ending.
So they saw the brilliance in that one
scene. I also, there were other reports that the whole cast was behind the head being in the box.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of stuff. I think we're going to save, I got two more kind of like internet research things. I think we're going to wait for those to the GM category. You guys got any thoughts on this movie just right off the top?
I mean, I think it's great. Like, I think Kevin Spacey, obviously now a villain in real life in many aspects, but like, I think that dude plays the hell out of a villain. Like, just his... He's so just flat.
Mm-hmm.
Like, his affect is non-existent.
He's
is just...
channeling the evil.
Yeah, exactly.
It perfectly.
And it's like... It's great because they don't introduce him in the opening credits. Like, yeah. They introduced a lot of the cast, but they leave out Kevin Spacey because they want it to be this big reveal.
Mm-hmm.
And I think as you watch the movie and you get into it and you see these, like, gruesome killings, everyone just kind of expects this mentally unstable kind of, like,
yeah.
fringe of society-looking person. And instead it's just this manicured, polished, easy-talking, obviously very psychologically messed up, but, like, it's not who we expect it to be as the serial killer, and so I think that reveal is very... is, for me, it's what makes the movie, is how well Kevin Spacey can portray that role.
And we'll get into this a little bit later, I think, but one of the brilliant things I think about Kevin Spacey playing this role, other than if you just look at who he is, like, we don't, like, in this movie, not talking about his long-term legacy, which obviously... he's fucked up. We don't... none of us condone that type of behavior.
Don't condone it.
Not into it. But in this movie, he's obviously very good, and I think part of that is the way that he looks, because even for a movie star, like, he's not paralyzingly handsome.
Yeah.
He... if he wasn't in these movies, if he wasn't a very talented actor, albeit tortured, like, just not a good person, he could be a normal guy. Like, he could just be a guy who works in an office.
Yep. Insurance broker. Yeah.
Like, he's John... he is John Doe
yep.
in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
Which I thought was good. The vagueness of him was good.
Yeah. I think, like, Kevin Spacey's obviously, like, the centerpiece of it, of the whole evil, all the evil, mm-hmm. and the murders are, like, the centerpiece of everything. But I think one of the guys who really carries the whole movie is Morgan Freeman.
For sure.
Just, he's everything wonderful. He says, I just am, like, hanging on thread for what he's saying, because it's, like, it's brilliant. He's so calm, his demeanor is so smooth, you know, countering Brad Pitt's, mm-hmm. you know, his demeanor. So I think Morgan Freeman just, like, played the hell out of this character.
Yeah.
Yeah. And another question I kind of had, I guess, off the top. I really do feel like this movie is speaking to us, like, both between Fincher and the screenwriter, who I don't have his name, but they are espousing their ideas. And I wanted to know what you guys thought. What percentage of Morgan Freeman's character was their thinking, and what percentage of Kevin Spacey's character? Because they both espouse a lot of the same views about apathy
mm-hmm.
and the kind of disregard we have for evil and sins that are happening all around us. What percent do you think is, or, like, how much do you think Fincher identifies with each character?
Like you alluded to, I think Fincher was in a pretty dark place when mm-hmm. he picked this one up. So I would probably say he was maybe more Spacey than Freeman, but yeah, I don't know. Thoughts?
I'd agree. I think he's more Spacey than Freeman.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think he's trying to find the Freeman in him, find more Freeman, but he's more Spacey.
Yeah, I mean, and there's even a line where Brad Pitt, like, Morgan Freeman goes on this little rant about how he can't live in this world with apathy.
Yeah.
And Brad Pitt responds, like, I've no doubt, I don't think you believe that, and so you're retiring. I think you're retiring, and so you want to believe
that.
Yeah.
And I kind of feel like maybe that was why Fincher made the movie. He was like, these are things I believe, and so I need to make a movie about it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Not like, I need to make a movie, and these are things I believe.
Yeah.
I'd agree.
Yeah. You want to talk about anything more, or do you want to get into categories? All right, we're into the categories. By the way, there might be a little ambient sound, you guys. We're at the U.S. 20K Championships preparing to race tomorrow, so I don't know. It sounded like there was something going on in the hall, but we're all very excited to race.
Oh, yeah.
First, we're going to talk about the winners of this movie.
That's right.
All right. What did you guys have for winners?
I mean, Kevin Spacey won.
Yeah.
Because his whole master plan worked out perfectly.
Mm-hmm. So and he's played an amazing role.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Who else was a winner?
Brad Pitt's broken arm. I don't know if that was one of the ones you were going to talk about. But it's crazy. I was, like, doing a little bit of homework on the shuttle ride over here. And he, in the scene where he's chasing John Doe, his arm goes through a car windshield when they were filming, and he broke it. And then they wrote into the screenplay that he was supposed to injure his arm in that scene. And so that's why, like, halfway through the film, he just gets a swing on his arm, it's because Brad Pitt's arm is actually broken.
Needed surgery.
Yep. Yeah. So yeah, I think it's interesting that, like,
I love and stuff like that.
Yeah, like Lord of the Rings, the in Two Towers when
you would bring up Lord of the
Rings. Yeah, I would, of course. Aragorn finds out that, like, Merry and Pippin are probably dead in the Uruk slaughter, and he, like, kicks the shit out of that helmet. He breaks his toe in that scene, and he lets out this huge scream, and that's him breaking his toe.
That's
and
so
they
real.
Kept that.
That's
filming
the
version, yeah.
Nice.
So I always love it when, like, things like this happen in movie filming, and instead of being like, ah, we'll just figure out a way around it or we'll refilm it, they're just like, nope, that's it.
It's in
we're
now.
We're working with this now.
Yeah.
There's not many winners in this movie, honestly.
Yeah,
I was trying to think
dark.
Of winners as, like, I have a list of losers
mm-hmm.
that are way more than my winners.
Okay. I think I, as a podcast host, I think I need to explain winners to my guests more.
Okay.
So by winners, I mean things we liked about the movie, not
okay.
who at the end were won.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I have a lot of, like, things that have nothing to do with the plot. Like, my first winner is the first time we see Morgan Freeman, we know exactly who his character is. Like, the very first shot we see of him, he's picking up, like, his badge, his gun, his knife, his wallet. They're all lined up perfectly.
Yeah.
His tie is straight. His collar is just perfect.
Mm-hmm.
And we immediately know exactly who this character
mm-hmm.
is. Like, that's a winner for me.
Yeah.
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 I get it now. So I liked the constant disparity between the two detectives.
Yeah.
As you can see, Brad Pitt's Mills just ridiculous, you know, fueled off emotion.
Yeah,
his
he's hatred. A doofus.
He's a doofus.
He's a big
he's
dumbass.
He's an idiot. He doesn't read, and then the exact opposite with Morgan Freeman, just, like, very cultured, very intelligent, very thoughtful. There's just, like, constant examples of that throughout the whole movie.
Yeah, I mean, those two are juxtaposed pretty much at every opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think the first time, yeah, we meet Morgan Freeman's character, he's, yeah, in his quiet home, everything's very manicured, and he has this orderly way that he goes about things, and in Brad Pitt, it's like he moves into that apartment where the train goes right behind it.
Yep.
At certain times of day, he's got his dogs barking, there's shit all over his apartment.
Yeah.
Like, there could not be more different people, and I think that's kind of a trope we see a lot of times in, like, detective movies, is that there are, like, I think of, like, now I'm gonna blank on it, the HBO miniseries with Matthew McConaughey.
True Detective.
Yes, True Detective, thank
yeah.
you. It's like the same kind of thing. A lot of times we get these kind of opposite ends of the spectrums detectives who are paired together and have to make it work in pursuit of
good cop, bad
the job.
Cop.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that's a trope we see pretty commonly in TV and film, but I think this one especially stands out to me as, like, the best job done of it. So that's a big winner for
sure.
me.
Sure. It's definitely on maybe on the Mount Rushmore of good cop, bad cop pairings.
Yeah, for
yeah,
sure.
Or different cop pairings. Brad Pitt being a doofus is kind of a winner for me too.
Yeah.
He does it really, really well.
He yeah. does.
I looked through
hot
his
doofus.
What, yeah, a very beautiful doofus, like a golden retriever.
Yeah, I
yes.
know.
Yeah, a gorgeous, charismatic,
beautiful idiot
dummy. Yeah. I went through his IMDb. I think three of my favorite movies with him are him kind of as a dipshit.
Mm.
I mean, this one is obviously way up there. Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, he's kind of an idiot. And Inglourious Bastards. Like,
oh,
he's
yeah.
just a
Gorlami.
Gorlami. That's right. Third most.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What about Burn After Reading? Have you seen
Burn
that?
After Reading, he's a dummy,
he's
too.
He's a
huge
doofus.
Huge doofus, yeah.
He does a great job of being just a beautiful dumbass.
Yeah, but, like, on the other hand, other side of it, like, I don't really like him when he's smarter.
Serious, yeah.
You
like
know,
like
I don't
World
want him.
War
he's
Z,
not the smartest guy in the
he's
room.
He's, like, the scientist
yeah.
who finds the cure or whatever.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, he's, I can't take this
the
seriously.
Movie was just generally not very good.
Yeah.
Too.
This is true.
And,
Moneyball
was
fine. He was kind of smart in that.
But even in Moneyball, he was just, like, he just realized this other smart guy was smarter.
True.
Mm-hmm.
He was like, yeah,
the
I'm just going to be
seeker.
I'm just going to let this guy decide what to do, and I'll just call up other GMs and make ridiculous offers for Rincon.
So I'm on the train now that I like Brad Pitt as being an idiot
yeah.
in movies.
He needs to be dumber than everybody else.
Yeah.
But think he needs to think that he's got everything under control.
Yeah.
He has a really funny line where he's a big idiot in this movie. After the first victim, they're back in the station, and the coroner says that the bruises that they find on the back of the head could have been caused by a murderer shoving a gun barrel against the gluttony victim's head. Brad Pitt says, "Ladies and gentlemen, we have a homicide. oh, really? The fucking barbed wire around the victim's arms and legs didn't give it away? Like,
now we have a homicide. He's such an idiot.
Yeah.
I have another winner.
All right. It is
the general grunginess, darkness, harshness that the movie was filmed in.
Yeah.
And I read there was, like, a fun fact. I do not have it in front of me, but, like, the way that they filmed it, like, they processed the film, made it so that it was, like, darker and harsher. Is like, so they, it was, like, from the get-go, they decided it was just going to look like a terrible place. Yeah. Every scene, basically.
And to go along with that, like, the vagueness of it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it, they never specify what city it's in. It's just any city.
That's true.
And the fact that the villain is literally called John Doe.
And just, like, general, like, the environment, like, the rain. It's just always pouring rain, which is, just looks miserable.
Yeah.
And just, like, it's always cloudy. There's not very much sun at all.
Yeah, I think this is one of those movies where you're like, you never question anything about the setting.
Yeah. They do a good job.
Every scene feels like it exists in this singular space that is inside of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And there are some movies where you just like pop into like very recognizable settings, like, oh, there's the London Eye or whatever it may be. And all of a sudden you're like, well, we're in a different place than we were. And this is just so enrapturing in the fact that it is so like isolated in this, and it's kind of confining.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say that's kind of how the whole movie feels. Like, it's just pretty inescapable.
Yeah, and they
once you hit play, you can't pause it.
Yeah, and they do a good job of not giving us, like, a geographic idea of where they are in the city.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you have no idea. This, it's just, it feels like they're just in a maze.
Yeah.
I have no idea where north or south is, and the only time we ever even find out that this city doesn't stretch on for the entire Earth is the very end, where they're out in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Another winner for me would be the way they set up the seven sins as the serial killings. Like, I think that's another, like, biblical reference is also very tropical. But, again, it's like, this is a movie that could have gone one of two ways, right? It was either going to be just very overdone and something people had seen before in, like, a religious underpinnings serial killer movie with good cop, bad cop, or it could have been what it is, which is a very strong kind of, like, touch point for a lot of other movies to key off of and kind of look at as an example of, like, oh, this is how it's done. This is how you make a grisly, dark thriller.
Yeah, and I thought it was great that they, you're right, like, religious undertones is, like, a huge trope, but this one didn't have religious undertones. It had religious overtones.
Mm-hmm.
They just, Fincher just came out and was like,
yeah.
Was like, yeah, like, we're just gonna say it. Like, this is exactly what this is. Everyone is gonna be on board with this.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't have to, like, figure that part out.
Yep.
He, like, left the nuance for other things, I think. Mm-hmm. Like, what he actually wanted to say, not, like, is this religious, is this not? He was like, no. This fucker is reading from Dante Alighieri.
Yeah.
These are the books that he referenced. Although that was strong as well.
Mm-hmm.
I liked that evil kind of gets to be a character in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
Like, it's sort of a force in and of itself.
Taking over.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it's not just, they both Brad Pitt and Morgan Freeman recount, and even Kevin Spacey, they recount, like, the horrors of basically of living in a city, even beyond the things that they do themselves. Is that, got any others?
That all seems solid to me.
Yeah. Alright. I had a few more.
Let's hear it.
I liked the references to other serial killers. I caught three. I probably missed some. There was two right back-to-back when they're waiting for, they're talking about the motive, and Brad Pitt's like, he's crazy, like, maybe his dog made him do it, told me to do it, and that refers to David Berkowitz, who is the son of Sam. He talks about, he says, maybe Jodie Foster told him to do it. That was John Hinckley, who tried to kill Ronald Reagan.
Mm-hmm.
And then they go to the Wild Bill leather shop, which I'm pretty sure is a veiled Silence of the Lambs reference.
Mm-hmm.
It's Buffalo Bill.
Yep.
Is the name of the killer.
Yeah.
Let's see, what else do I have here? All right, here was a debate that I think we can have from the movie that I think is a big winner. The fact that we can talk about this movie in a bunch of different ways, but the debate is John Doe actually crazy? That's, the winner is the fact that this debate exists.
Mm-hmm. Oh my God, yeah.
Because on one hand, yeah, for sure, absolutely. He's a nutjob.
Yeah.
On the other hand, he's smart, calculated, patient, logical, he has a cohesive worldview, and I think Fincher thinks that he's not crazy. I think Fincher thinks that in a sick kind of way, what he's doing makes sense, even if it's not an acceptable way of expressing that.
I hope he doesn't think that he's not. That I hope that he doesn't think he's normal. I think he's trying to make a point and try to get more people to realize that crazy isn't what crazy usually is. It's not just like you're out there and you're geriatric and making ridiculous judgments. It's crazy can be in a lot of different types of, you know, different forms. And the fact that Kevin Spacey is seemingly normal in almost every way.
Yeah.
But he's making decisions that a crazy person would make, like murdering and stuff.
And
I think he's crazy in a different way.
He does have delusions of grandeur. He believes that this is his work that's sent down by God.
Yep.
Which is, in general, a not rational thing to think. But we do get a number of times when both Morgan Freeman and Kevin Spacey himself kind of say that labeling him as crazy is dismissive.
Yeah.
Which I think is kind of the point. Like, evil, as if he's a, if Kevin Spacey's a proxy for evil, is not insane. It's kind of an inherent part of humanity. But he said, Morgan Freeman says it's dismissive and reductive, and then Kevin Spacey says, it's more comfortable for you to label me as insane.
Mm-hmm.
And then Brad Pitt, the doofus of the movie, says, it's very comfortable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's falling right into the trap.
Yeah.
And I think, to your point earlier, Scott, it's like, I think in a lot of ways, John Doe isn't representative of, like, it could be anybody, like you said. Like, this is, like, it doesn't have to be some off-the-rails dude. Like, it could be somebody who just has this vision of a more, like, cleansed society or whatever you want to call it. Like, eliminating these sins and taking out a lot of these things and replacing them with, you know, a lot of, like, sterile society in which people only do quote-unquote good. And, like, obviously he's taking it to an extreme, but, like, I think Fincher wants to make the point that, like, this isn't just a one-off guy who's a crazy serial killer, like we've said, but it's, like, the fact that it is John Doe, like, that's, you know, could be Willie, for all we know. It could be some guy walking down the street. Like, it doesn't matter who it is. It's just the fact that this exists in the world, and he wants to call it out and bring light to it.
And, I mean, even more broadly, I think calling him John Doe is also sort of a reference to the fact that I think Fincher believes that while not everyone is necessarily capable of doing what John Doe did, there is a little bit of John Doe in everyone. There's, like, a hatred of the apathy of the sins that we see all around us, and the hatred of, frankly, the sins that we see all around us, whatever our perceived sins are. We're all making judgments about what is appropriate and not appropriate behavior, and we all want to kind of cut out, the judgmental side of us wants to cut out people's inappropriate behavior, and I think they do a really good job of kind of, like, saying that in a way that's not quite so out there. It's not so on the nose, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just a lot easier to try to just decide to cut it out.
Yeah.
To cut out the inappropriateness.
Yeah. And then I've got one more winner. I really like that Brad Pitt is drinking a PBR out of the bottle. I love that that is a scene. Like, they could have given him a can. They could have given him anything. They could have just given him, like, a nondescript bottle. I'm glad it was PBR out of the bottle. I don't have any film reason for that. I just think it's fun.
Yeah, it fits his character
well. Yeah.
Such a PBR beer guy.
Yeah. All right, losers. What do you guys have for this one?
Well, specifically, I got, you know, the dogs. Dogs in general.
Yeah.
Because, A, at the end of the movie, there's the dog that died, which I don't know why they put that in there. It's kind of a funny joking scene.
Like, Kevin Spacey's like,
I didn't do that one.
The serial killer has humor.
Yeah.
But also Brad Pitt's dogs. They're living in a terrible city before they are now homeless.
Yeah, they're orphaned.
They're orphaned now.
Yeah.
So it's like, this is terribly sad. Out of all the things that are sad in this movie, I would have to say the dogs are up there.
Willie's going to adopt them.
I'm going to adopt them for sure. They're probably dead by now because this is 24 years ago. 25 years ago. Anyways, that's my first loser.
I think my biggest loser is, like, all this feels like it could happen.
Oh, yeah.
Except for Sloth.
Sloth is the one that you don't think
like that happened. Dude should be so dead.
Okay.
And he's somehow
did
alive.
Did you do any research, Scott, on if it's possible
to keep someone alive
like
in
that.
Such a manner?
Like, he looked like a mummy, and then he just, like,
there's
springs
no
to life and then dies very conveniently and immediately as soon as the detectives are in
you
the
know,
room.
You know, Kev, I feel like...
No, he didn't die. He went to the hospital.
But then he died.
But then he died on the way to the hospital, doesn't
no,
he?
No, he doesn't. The
yeah,
doctor
he,
says...
His brain was mush.
Yeah, the doctor says
that's
he's
what it is,
gone
yeah.
through
die
more
shock.
Pain, give or take, than
yeah.
I've ever seen. He would die of shock.
Yeah.
Oh, the guy, he asked, like, could we talk to him? And he said, even if his brain wasn't mush, he chewed off his tongue long ago.
Yeah, that's right.
And he would die of shock if someone put a
flashlight
in
his
face.
Yeah, he said... He's gone through more suffering, give or take, than I've ever seen,
no
and he still has hell to look forward to.
Yeah.
There's no way he would, that's possible
yeah.
in real life.
Yeah, so, that, like, I mean, gluttony.
Yeah, how did they not, how does that, like, doctor, like, just some orderly, not
yes.
be like, I'm just shining a light in his eyes, this
yeah.
has to be over for this guy. Like, he has
yeah.
no, like, it's nothing
and
to look forward
it's...
to. Like, just, I know no court in the country would convict that person.
Yep. So I
yeah.
think it's, like, all, everything feels very plausible except for Sloth to me. And
mm-hmm.
so, therefore,
okay.
that's the one that sticks out to me is, like, that's my biggest loser.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because it all of a sudden, like, that's kind of, like, almost sci-fi-y, the fact that we're able to keep a man alive with this, like, trickle thread of nutrients going into his mummified
yeah.
body. It's like, okay.
John Doe must have gone to med school.
Yeah.
Because
exactly.
there's no way you could have
yeah.
kept a man
yeah.
alive like that without med school.
Or maybe just generally. It's not possible. Yeah.
yeah, just...
All right. Loser, Sloth, keeping that guy alive for so long.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them were kind of on the nose, like a little bit too on the nose. Maybe you could make that argument.
Mm.
Will, you got any other losers?
Hold on. Let me pull them up real quick. A small one. Real estate agents. There's that one
yeah.
scene.
Fucking dicks. Yeah.
Because there's assholes. They get a bad rap because they... sold the apartment to Brad Pitt and Gwyneth Paltrow, even though there's a train that, like, seems to be running through the apartment.
Yeah.
It
yeah.
goes by. It's like an earthquake every time that they go through. I think this movie is generally a loser now that it's intertwined with Kevin Spacey.
Oh, yeah. We'll say Kevin Spacey's legacy as a whole.
Yeah,
Kevin
very
Spacey's
much a loser.
Legacy as a whole, yeah.
yeah.
So
it's
John,
hard. It's that's something you got to get over.
Can we confirm John Doe as... crazy now because Kevin Spacey is probably crazy.
Maybe, yeah.
Can we make those
really puts a strange, like, twist on a lot of his roles.
Yeah, definitely mm-hmm. does. And then Brad Pitt's a loser because he lost his wife.
Yeah, and but, freedom.
And
he's
freedom.
Probably going to jail for...
Well, we talked about this.
Yeah, he's not going to jail for long, we don't think.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Either. Yeah, he probably gets, like, 8 to 10 years. He's out in 4 with good behavior.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he's in a cushy prison.
Yeah.
Where they serve PBRs.
Yeah, I hope so. He gets... He actually does make a case that jail's not so bad. He's like, you get your 3 meals a day, you get cable. My wife doesn't even have cable. He got cable now.
Yeah,
you know,
that was some
that's
good
true.
Foreshadowing.
It's an upgrade.
Yeah.
Because he's most likely going to be there.
Yeah.
I think Brad Pitt's relationship with Gwyneth Paltrow is kind of a loser.
You just didn't buy it, or like...
Yeah, it just never felt like they were...
There was no... Yeah, they didn't build a relationship
yeah,
at all.
Like,
yeah, like... assume that it's
this,
perfect and
like, until
happen.
The reveal, where he just absolutely... Like, I think his portrayal of a man whose wife's head has just been chopped off and presented to him is spot on.
Yeah.
But, like,
as
up until
a,
that, like...
You would guess.
Yes,
yeah.
I would assume. but, like, there's a good amount of scenes where they're interacting, and at no point am I like, man, this guy... truly, truly, deeply, like, loves his wife to the point where he'd kill a man over her.
It's
so
funny
it's
you
like,
say that, because...
Was that a winner for you?
No,
okay.
But Brad Pitt and Gwyneth Paltrow went on to date after the meeting in this movie. Yeah,
interesting.
So they actually did have real-life chemistry.
Yeah, there you have
That's
it.
Fincher's fault.
Yeah.
yeah.
He didn't build the time into build that relationship in the movie.
Yeah, like, there's the scene where Somerset comes over for dinner
yeah.
in their apartment, and it's like...
It's pretty awkward.
He just seems,
yeah,
like, Mills just seems kind of, like,
just
dickish
asshole.
To Gwyneth Paltrow
yeah.
the whole time. And it's like, yeah, like, she's trying to make small talk with Somerset, and it's just, yeah, no
Brad
point.
Brad Pitt is obviously pissed off.
Yeah,
but,
like, I don't
yeah.
truly buy that it's, like, I wanted that relationship to be built more, especially
mm-hmm.
considering, like, the ultimate climax of the movie entirely hinges on that relationship.
Yeah, I think you can tell also that Tracy isn't really happy, Gwyneth
mm-hmm.
Paltrow's character.
Yep, yep.
Reaches,
like,
out to Somerset.
Reaches, yeah, she yeah. says, like, you're the only person I can talk to. And it's like, you know, your husband's showering in the other room.
yeah.
Maybe if this relationship was going a little bit better, you could talk to him.
That's a really good loser.
But I do think that's almost, to me, that's also kind of a winner.
Yeah.
Brad Pitt is just so blinded by his pursuit like his ego in a lot of ways. Like, he is not a detective because he wants to, like, clean up the streets and do it for the right reasons. He's in it for seemingly, like, the glory of it.
Yeah.
And the chase and, you know, chasing after these people who are doing horrible things so that he can be the one to catch them, not because he wants them in a prison.
Yeah.
So I think that's almost a winner, is that, like, he is neglecting their relationship in favor of his own glory.
Sure.
But then I think that becomes a loser when the climax of the movie hinges around the head in the box.
Yeah.
So it's a winner and a loser.
Gotcha.
Yes.
One of my losers was, how did Brad Pitt ascend so high in the police ranks? Like, he's an idiot.
Doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. Like, he is reading, at one point he's reading Dante Alighieri, and he gets frustrated.
Because he can't.
And he throws the book at his car, but it's just because he gets confused.
Yep.
He's just frustrated.
Frustrated. I imagine he did very well in the physical tests in the academy.
Yeah, it really boosted his scores.
Cheated off of the guy sitting next to him on the academic tests.
Yeah, so I just don't think that there's any evidence that he is, that Brad Pitt is.
He should be taking over the role that Summer sets
in. Lead detective.
Because he has
not equipped.
So many things hint him not being successful at all. He's, like, anger management issues.
Oh, yeah.
He's quick to judge. He's insanely emotional, and he's objectively dumb.
Yeah.
It's like, how is anyone good at their job with all those all of those things?
It's like, how are you not just a beat cop? Yeah. Like, you're just driving around, you're pulling people over, occasionally you make a drug bust. That's your whole job as a police officer. You're an idiot. You got any other losers?
No. Those were my big two. Sloth and the relationship with his wife.
Yeah. All right. I didn't like, here's a loser I had for you. The captain telling his lead detective, don't get that big brain of yours going. What? Are you against your detectives using your
brain? Don't you solve this case too quickly now.
You know what I would like you to do? I'd like to jump to conclusions on this one.
Yeah, that was a stupid line.
Yeah.
Very stupid.
I thought cutting off your, I was confused by the cutting off, like, not confused. I realize he's cutting off his fingers to hide his identity, but, like,
oh, I forgot about that. Yeah, that's a loser.
Like, you can't just, I mean, I appreciate the dedication. You couldn't have just worn gloves or burned them off.
I also just don't think that's how fingertips work.
Yeah.
Like, you just slice off a layer every and then few your days, fingerprint's gone. Yeah.
And also, like, they're like, where there's no way to, we have no leads to figure out who this person is.
Yeah.
Like, you couldn't wait 4 days for not give him any razor blades.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's not that hard. You know he's independently wealthy. You're bound to have his fingerprints.
Yeah.
You can figure it out, I promise. Yeah, I had the dogs.
Yep.
So sad.
One loser. The sketch that Mills gives to the police officer, it's basically a box with four lines in the middle of it that and a Heisenberg hat. That's what it looks like. It's awful. Yeah. Nobody could ever be identified on that. And then I had a few, like, questions about the plot and also the character's behavior. First of all, how did he know that the pride kill, the cut off your nose to spite your face, would swallow the pills? Do you think he stayed there and threatened her? Because the implication is that she could have called for help.
The whole thing could have ended.
Yeah, she could have just called 911, and then the plot unravels.
The whole thing is spoiled.
Yeah.
I think he did his homework, as he did with every other murder.
You think he knew?
But 100%. How do you know?
How do you know? That's my point. Like, how do you know that's going to work?
Yeah.
Yeah. He could have just forced her if it was going to.
Yeah.
Because he wanted his way. He had his way.
Yeah. I also had, at the very end during the twist, when the head is in the box and Spacey's taunting Brad Pitt, why doesn't Morgan Freeman just stand in between them? Like, why is he standing off to the side and being like, all right, now, don't shoot him.
Put the gun away.
Yeah, you put the gun away. Why don't you stand in between him, maybe? Like,
ran all the way over to them and stopped.
Yeah. Not 3 feet short of stopping Brad Pitt from killing Kevin Spacey.
Maybe he was scared of getting shot himself.
Yeah, maybe.
Brad Pitt's insane.
But, like, where's Kevin Spacey going to go? Like, you can turn your back on a chained and shackled prisoner when you have a helicopter above.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be okay.
Yeah.
All right. And my biggest one, how did John Doe plan this? That's my biggest question. And here's what I'm saying about this. So the sloth guy, we know that the plan started a year ago. That he's got the pictures every 3 days or whatever.
Yeah.
It's been starving this guy. He starts to get murdered a year ago. So that's when the plan begins. That being said, Brad Pitt's character gets transferred to the city like 10 days before the ending.
Yeah.
Like, his first day of work is 7 days before the twist.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think.
Was he just going to wing the last two murders? Did he have to, like, improvise when he met Brad Pitt?
Yeah, that's true.
There's no way that Morgan Freeman was going to be Raff. No.
Yeah. Was he just going to target the cop with the prettiest wife?
Probably.
Yeah.
He's like, well, this guy's married to Gwyneth Paltrow. I'm going to choose him.
That's yeah, and then how did he know that Somerset was going to go check the box? How did he know Mills was going to be stay behind?
Because
he needed to taunt him.
Huge plot holes.
See? I just didn't get it. This was the first time I'd ever had these questions in, like, four times of watching it, but...
Maybe he truly was on a mission from God, and God had aligned these things to happen for him.
I think this is just...
divine intervention.
Yeah,
just
yeah.
what God wanted. I was thinking, like, when I was thinking about the planning, it's just I was trying to work through the schedule that John Doe had to work through to do all this in succession, at the everything in at the right time.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, the fact that Brad Pitt got transferred there... now it just kind of blows the whole thing up.
Yeah, that is true.
But still, a lot of planning.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's meticulous,
very meticulous.
A winner here is planning.
Do you think he had a planner?
He must have.
He had all those notebooks.
Just a long, long to-do list that he had to do in a very specific order.
Oh, that gives me so much anxiety just thinking about all that to-do list.
All right. Sequel category.
Of course.
Oh, do we have a... Do you have any more losers first before we move on?
Nope.
All right.
I don't think so.
Sequel category. Do we want one?
Eight.
You want eight of them?
No, I'm saying the next one would be called eight.
Eight, gotcha.
This one's called seven.
Okay, gotcha. I understand. I said no, I don't want one.
I don't think I want one either.
I think there's a lot of opportunity for a really good story or another really good movie to be made, but I don't want to watch another.
I agree.
Would you rather have it be a sequel with Brad Pitt in prison or a prequel where we see Kevin Spacey going crazy? I mean, not Kevin Spacey now. You'd have to get a new actor.
Yeah. I think sequel would make more sense.
Yeah.
Because the prequel, I don't think there would be, like, this crazy descent from John Doe into madness, crazy, sociopathic, whatever you want to call it. Like, I think he just kind of was probably always that way and then had this kind of idea and then just was like, yep, this is why I'm here on this earth.
Yeah.
And then it slowly just became an actual plan.
Yeah.
I think it'd be more entertaining watching a sequel. I think the prequel would be kind of interesting to see the details of the lead up, but I think a better movie idea would be the sequel.
When do you want to start? Do you want to start, like, the next day?
Yes, immediately.
I want the opening scene to be Brad Pitt
getting out of
rubbing
prison.
His wrists as he finally has his shackles taken off, stretching and walking out into the free world again, and figuring out how to be a human.
I want to see him getting torn down after the whole event and then rebuilding himself in prison.
What if it's like the last 7 days in prison?
That'd be kind of good.
He's got to deal with his last week, and then he gets out. Morgan Freeman's just coming to visit him every few days.
I feel like at that point, though, he'd be, like, if it's the last, like, presumably he's going to be in there for multiple years.
Yeah.
So I feel like after you've been in prison for a couple of years, you probably just have your routine. So watching 7 days of a guy who's been in prison for a couple of years would be pretty...
It'd be boring,
uninspiring.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of what would be the best, most entertaining, and I feel like after, you know, they're talking about, like, press and news throughout this whole thing. So, like, there's a lot of coverage, a lot of media coverage on, like, all these murders in the city. I think it's going to inspire actual crazies to try kind of reinvent or, like, to copy what John Doe did.
They're just chasing down copycats.
And then the police are going to, like, have to deal with, like, this onslaught of ridiculous murders that are inspired by John Doe.
Yeah, I would almost want to see a parallel film. That's kind of like Nightcrawler with Gyllenhaal.
Okay.
Where there's a journalist who's trying to beat Somerset and Mills to John Doe.
And he's just constantly paying
cops.
All right.
So that's kind of like a spotlight Nightcrawler.
I'm kind of into it. I like that one.
Spotlight Nightcrawler and Seven combined.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's interesting.
It'd be called probably some reference to like the pages of the Bible or something like that.
Yeah, probably.
I
think that could be cool.
Yeah. All right, that's what we want. We want
Fincher,
get back on Seven, please.
Yep.
All right, we're on to the GM category. All right, so just some... this is just based on the internet. No idea if this is true. Denzel was originally cast as Mills, and he turned it down. Apparently regrets it. Good call. Like, would you like to see this movie with Denzel?
I think Morgan Freeman's the right casting.
No. He would have played the Pitt character.
He would have played Brad Pitt.
Oh, interesting. Whoa.
Yeah.
Wild card.
I think he's played kind of an off the rails, kind of angry actor before.
I think we like him more when he's controlled, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think Denzel could have done a good job, but I think Brad Pitt works a lot better.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going Brad Pitt on that one.
And the other one, I mean, thank God this didn't happen, but apparently Val Kilmer was considered for...
Oh, God.
For John Doe. Thank God that didn't happen. Just leave Val Kilmer in Top Gun. Thank you very much.
Yep. That would have been
Stay
tough.
Stay there, please.
Yeah. All right. I think we leave Morgan Freeman as is, for sure.
Yeah.
He's perfect. His voice.
I don't think we need to talk about who could have played Tracy, because it's any pretty woman.
Yep.
Yeah. Gwyneth Paltrow was great. I think that's kind of a throwaway part.
Yep.
Agreed.
I made a list of 90s guys that could have played Mills.
Okay.
And I wanted to discuss who we think would be the best. Pitt, Damon, Affleck, Ed Norton, Will Smith, Vince Vaughn, he's my dark horse, or Leo, or Denzel.
So, off the bat, I think Ed Norton would do good.
Yeah,
I do but too. That's just like, I think that's just like, you know,
that might club. Be the Fight Club, yeah.
Yeah.
So that's same the fight person. Club
but I do think he would do a really good job of that because he's played crazy before.
Yeah.
And I think of him in American History X, and if you blend Fight Club and American History X Norton, you kind of get Brad Pitt.
Yeah, that works
movie.
Out real well.
So I could see that being good.
He's also, I kind of like him when he is the smartest guy in the room, though. Uh-huh. Like in Red Dragon, for example.
He's the thinker.
Yeah.
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 The thinker. But he also plays a scumbag really well in Rounders.
Yeah, that's true.
So I would be okay with Ed Norton in this role, for
sure. I think Ed Norton would do very well.
I don't think Leo's right for it. He's too suave.
You don't think he could have done the gritty?
Has he been gritty?
He was,
I mean, like, he's always
Revenant.
Yeah, Revenant,
gritty.
That's true.
But he's kind of a gritty doofus in Shutter Island.
That's also true.
Sorry, he's actually mentally ill, but the detective that he's pretending to be
is
kind of an idiot.
This is true.
Will
Smith's a no for me.
No, you're out on
Will
Smith. But in 1994, I guess he's fresh off Prince of Bel-Air.
I just saw Aladdin, the live version, so my latest Will Smith interaction has been him as a giant purple genie. So
clearly, your idea of him is way off.
Yes, true.
It would be the 90s.
My only criteria for putting guys on this list, really, were guys who were leading men in the 90s. Mm-hmm. That's about it.
So Matt Damon is one?
Damon, Brad Pitt, Ben Affleck, Norton, Will Smith. And then I think Vince Vaughn in here as well, because not at this time, but he did do a remake of Psycho, which is really weird.
He was in
John Favreau.
True Detective.
He was in True Detective Season 2.
Mm-hmm.
He's probably filming Swingers around this time, so I don't know that he would have liked to go this way.
Mm-hmm.
But I kind of think he could have.
I think he could.
It wouldn't have been as good. He's not as charismatic. I don't feel for him as much.
Yeah.
I kind of think you're just a stupid idiot.
Big dumb idiot.
Yeah.
I think Vince Vaughn could have sneakily done well, and I think Ben Affleck could be really good.
Yeah,
I think all of them are good picks, but I like Brad Pitt for it
for sure.
I think
he's
the right call.
I think if I could go back and cast, I would have put Ed Norton in here.
I think so too.
That being said, I thought Brad Pitt did a great job.
Yeah, I would agree.
That's also just Fincher doing an amazing job of the Fight Club, same person
for sure.
So it's just really embedded in our brains now.
Definitely. And then I had some possibilities for the Kevin Spacey role.
Oh yeah.
All right, so if we're casting this nowadays, here's what I got for you.
Okay.
I got John Hamm, and here's why.
I like this.
I think the point of John Doe is to be, is to not really do much. He's just kind of looming, and then at the end he espouses his bullshit. But for the most part, he's kind of just a presence.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Which is a lot like Don Draper.
Yeah.
Don Draper is very benevolent in Mad Men. And I know that his choices since then have been very much the other way. He was like over the top in The Town, and he was over the top in Baby Driver, and over the top in Tag. But I think he could do understated again. And I think he could do like monotone and glib. And then my other one for that is Anthony Hopkins could have done it, obviously.
Yeah, Anthony Hopkins.
That was my first one to pop my head is Anthony Hopkins.
I mean, he was Hannibal Lecter three years
exactly.
earlier. Do you have any more do you want to talk about more of John Hamm? I think he might be too handsome, is the only thing.
That's what I was going to say.
He's too He's not nondescript enough.
Yeah.
He's an imposing figure, and you could really get that vibe off of him, but he's just too beautiful.
Yeah. God doesn't give with two hams, except... Two hands. Wow. Except for John Hamm. He doesn't give with two hams.
Well played.
Yeah.
It's a ham twister.
Yeah. It's a ham twister. Great. Yeah. Anyone else for the Kevin Spacey character?
I was thinking, what's his name? He's in Her.
Joaquin Phoenix?
Yeah.
Oh, that could be good.
That could be good. He's not too handsome, and he's scary.
He's got a little, you know, a little thing, cleft lip, too.
Yeah.
I don't know what that has to do with it, but...
He's the new Bond Joker. Villain, right?
No, he's the new Joker.
He's the new Joker.
But he's also a Bond villain?
I don't think
is
Joaquin
he Inspector
Phoenix.
Or something like that?
I think that's Javier Bardem.
That's what I'm thinking of. Yeah. Thank you. He would also be good.
Yeah.
What about Christoph Waltz, if he didn't have an accent?
Nah, too handsome.
And he's kind of silly.
Yeah.
His
charismatic.
His villain is like a little bit...
We're vetoing Christoph.
Yeah, I'm out on Christoph. I'd be fine with Javier Bardem. I mean, this is basically Anton Chigurh with a god complex.
Yeah.
So I'm fine with that. All right. We got anything else for GM category?
Apparently this was originally supposed to be Guillermo del Toro's movie.
Wow.
No
and it
way.
Went to Fincher.
I think we see the head in the
he
box if
it down.
It's Guillermo del Toro.
Yeah,
sure.
So it's interesting to think about, like, what could have been had
it
that
just becomes
gone.
Pan's Labyrinth.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. Like, or The Hobbit.
Yeah,
The Hobbit. It just becomes very silly adventure with gold and singing dwarves and, yeah. But it's interesting. Like, I would have loved to have seen that movie, too.
For sure. All right, we're on to the lines. So,
oh, I got some good ones for this.
This category is lines from this movie that would make the best Instagram or race caption on Instagram. All right. You got some? Go ahead.
I've got three, and I'm probably going to take most of the good
ones.
Yeah,
step on them. That's fine.
So the obvious one is just become Wrath. John Doe.
Become Wrath.
Great
yeah.
for a race photo.
Become Wrath.
A good one, if you're about to race a guy you don't like and you post a picture of that guy, tag him in it. You say, you're no messiah, you're a movie of the week, you're a fucking t-shirt at best.
That's a good one.
That's Mills. And then after a really big race, or if you're trying to have some hubris come into play, Somerset at one point just says, I'm hugely overrated.
Yeah, there you go.
That's a great one. And then a good one to freak out your competitors is Mills. Come on, he's insane. Look, right now he's probably dancing around in his grandma's panties. Yeah, rubbing himself in peanut butter. So that one's your out there race caption.
Such a weird line.
Yep. Yeah, you're just out there, you're just playing some psychological warfare.
Yeah, exactly. You're trying to get in everyone's head at that point.
Yeah.
So those are my big three.
All right.
Four. I got a couple ones for specifically bad races.
Okay.
Know why. It just kind of sticks out to me.
Really,
prepping
this
for,
is not a good
for
time.
Tuesday. The Tuesday internet
just
caption.
Where my head's at.
Yeah.
Just kidding. But
Willie's going to run great.
So a couple on the... I think Morgan Freeman said this one, but at the very beginning, I think early on, someone asked him, where are you headed? And Somerset goes, far away from here.
Far away from here. All right.
And then at the end of the movie, they also come back around, and he says, the head of the police department goes, where are you going? He's like, I'll be around.
Yeah.
So it's good come around.
Little redemption one there.
Yeah.
I'll be around.
So that'll be me. And then another one was when Somerset, towards the end of the movie, goes to Mills, goes, this isn't going to have a happy ending.
Yeah.
It's not possible.
That's a good one.
So that's like what's going through your head towards when you know it's a bad race, and that's what you're kind of telling yourself when you're in the worst state possible mentally.
Okay. So that could... See, I'm going to put a positive spin on that one. If you post a picture right before you make a big move, it cracks open a race.
Mm-hmm.
This isn't going to have a happy ending. You're talking to the other people.
True.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
so
yeah.
It depends on what perspective.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like you could be looking at a move happening and being like, this isn't going to have a happy ending. Or you could be about to put some people in the ground.
Yeah.
And say, this isn't going to have a happy ending for you.
That's what I love, you know? Is like that these statements by Somerset, mostly Somerset, are so definitive.
Mm-hmm.
And like he talks in such big, like such a big level. He's just a big level idea, man.
Yeah.
And then there's another one where he's, I don't know why he said this, but Somerset goes, who I am means absolutely nothing. Which is kind of just like, it just kind of grounds you. It could be a good caption if you're talking about, I don't know. I just liked it.
Yeah, it's a good one.
Oh, here's a good one. This one's from the doctor, talking about the sloth. We talked about this one. He's experienced about as much pain and suffering as anyone I've ever encountered, give or take, and he still has hell to look forward to.
That's marathon training. That's I'm so excited for you guys to feel that 4 weeks out from Chicago.
That really, that's a perfect quote for marathon training.
Like, you just finished a 24-mile run with some hard miles in there.
And you still have hell to look forward to.
Yeah, and you got 4 weeks to the race. Yeah. I like that one. I had that one, too.
Nice.
All right.
Sorry to steal it.
No, you're fine.
One more.
Oh, yeah. Please, hop in.
So, when you're trying to work through the mental hurdles of workouts and races, I think it's good to tell yourselves that you have to divorce yourself from emotion. Because Somerset, when he talks to Brad Pitt, he says, we have to divorce ourselves from emotion.
And okay.
Brad Pitt does not do that ever.
No.
But it's good to divorce yourself from emotion sometimes and see things without passion fueling your thoughts.
A little clarity.
Mm-hmm.
These are free, by the way, you guys. If you're listening to this, please use these. I think that'd be fun.
It's surprising how many quotes come out of this movie.
Yeah, yeah, I might take one of these.
Maybe not. I'll send you the list. I got them. I mean, for such a messed up movie, we've really going hard on the quotes. They almost all come in the last third of the movie, too.
Mm-hmm.
All right. A lot of them come from John Doe, shockingly enough. Here you go. Wanting people to listen.
Yeah.
You can't just tap them on the shoulder anymore. You have to hit them with a sledgehammer, and then you'll notice you've got their strict attention. That's a big move caption there.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah. That's a I'm here to play. I'm here to make a big move to
hit them with a sledgehammer.
Yeah. I got the suffering one. Here we go. I like this one specifically if you're an underdog going into a race with a large favorite.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you guys should both post this before you beat Galen in
Chicago. Yeah, I'm going to tag Galen in this one.
Yeah. If we catch John Doe and he ends up being the devil, I mean, if he's Satan himself, that might live up to our expectation. But he's not the devil. He's just a man.
That's so applicable.
Yeah, you're going down. That's a you're going down post.
You're going down, Satan.
Yeah. You're going down, Satan. Yeah.
Freudian slip.
Oh, I put that one in the wrong category. That's for the end. Oh, wait. Nope. That's the wrong category. Sorry, here we go. Nothing wrong with a man taking pleasure in his work. I won't deny my own personal desire to turn each sin against the sinner. That's how I'm coming to crush everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Post right there.
You're going to enjoy the shit out of it.
Yeah. And then the last one I've got, this is the last-ish line of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Somerset says, mm-hmm. Ernest Hemingway said, the world is a fine place and worth fighting it for. I agree with the second part. That's a, this person just got caught doping and I want to subtweet them. I really think that.
It's not a good world, but you're going to keep fighting.
Yeah.
that's true. That can be applied to so many different parts of life. Mm-hmm. That quote right there.
You got anything else, guys?
Nah, those are my big ones.
All right. And we're into the Landry Clark category. This category is dedicated to Landry Clark from Friday Night Lights for explaining and reading Of Mice and Men to Tim Riggins and asking him what the themes are and how they relate to his life. Tim says, I don't know, but he ends up getting a B- anyways and stays eligible for the playoffs. So, guys, what part of this movie really kind of like stood out to you? What kind of like kind of resonated with you a little bit? What were your takeaways?
I think that last quote kind of sums it up. The Ernest Hemingway line, where it's like, the world is a fine place and worth saving, and agreeing with the second part.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, especially in this setting that we're placed in, it's like, we are very up close and personal with a lot of, like, these huge flaws and all of these sins that are being conducted on a day-to-day basis, but, like, obviously heightened and taken to an extreme in this movie. And it's like, just because these things are happening doesn't mean we just get to, like, say it's all fucked and just be very self-centered and only look out for number one. It's like a reminder that, like, you can still care about other people. Like, I think Somerset truly cares for Mills and Tracy and, like, wants them to find a way to be happy in this life together, because that's something he very much missed out on in his own life, because he sees a lot of himself in Mills as, like, this obsessed with the Jop Cop. Obviously, they're in it more for different reasons, but it's like throughout the movie, there is this sort of hopefulness and optimism that like it can get better in some ways, and
things
like
could be
not
okay.
Everything is lost.
Yeah. I think there's two things. When we kind of touched on it, but discussion on apathy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Part of behind us right now. I think the apathy that whole conversation that Somerset's having is really applicable to our society now. It's just like, I think people are so worn down with certain things that you're just like, so many people are apathetic, but you still just need to find it within yourself to keep fighting.
Yeah.
To keep fighting what you think, like for what you believe in.
Yeah, like the Amazon is literally burning down right now.
Yes.
And
very topical.
Like, as we record this right now, the Amazon is on fire.
That's one example of many things going on.
And there was a shooting in Texas yesterday.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So and it's like, I could, should have probably at some point in my life donated money or done something to help this. But like, yeah, I had a bottle of water today also. You know, like I had bottled water,
yeah.
Like never... you know, whatever. But
yeah, we could go on about
all that kind of stuff like
too.
Cognitive dissonance that it sort of takes to like see this stuff happening and not actually do something.
Yeah,
about it.
Mm-hmm. And
know that it should be changed, but not take up the mantle yourself.
Exactly, yeah. And this is 25 years ago, and it's obviously so applicable then, and it's so applicable now.
Yeah,
of like you just need to focus on yourself, doing what you can to keep fighting, keep trying to do what you think is best, and not just sit there because you don't feel like doing anything. When you
yeah,
see something
there's like the quote that it's like, do your little bit of good wherever you are,
yeah,
and together, those little bits of good will overwhelm the world. I think
mm-hmm.
is the quote,
yeah,
something to that effect. It's like, it doesn't take one of us to have this Herculean effort to like save society, but it's like just small conscious efforts from everybody will make noticeable change.
Most people focus on how if like, oh well, I'm not doing so many things, so like what's this tiny little thing gonna do. So that was one of the things I think is applicable to everyone, which sucks to see in such a dark movie. It's
yeah.
like, oh god, this
it's the worst version of this.
Yeah, seriously.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then the other thing that I think is applicable is talking about Somerset and Mills. It's such a good example of the head versus the heart
mm-hmm.
and how to manage those two and balance those two. I think that's just it's just a good example, a very explicit example of the differences between those two within ourselves and how you can utilize that best.
Mm-hmm. I think there's also... Yeah, absolutely. I think one of the other things, we got to wrap this up pretty soon here because we have to get to the tech meeting, but the one last thing I wanted to say, we touched on the apathy, we've touched a couple times on sort of the banality of evil thing with the guy's literally named John Doe.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't have to be remarkable to be evil. The last one I wanted to talk about was the idea that we aren't necessarily, we're only dissuaded from doing bad things because of the consequences of them.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And there's a really good line.
That was a great line.
About when they're driving in the car, Somerset says, "It seems to me you're overlooking a glaring contradiction. If you were chosen, that is by a higher power. If your hand was forced, it seems strange to me that you would get so much enjoyment out of it. You enjoyed torturing those people. Doesn't seem to be keeping with martyrdom, does it?" And speaking truth to power, as always, John Doe says, "I doubt I enjoyed it any more than Detective Mills would enjoy some alone time with me in a room without windows. Isn't that true? How happy would it make you to hurt me without or with impunity?" Like the idea that we don't necessarily live up to our ideas of ourselves except for the fact that there are external consequences.
Mm-hmm.
If those weren't necessarily around, what would our behavior look like?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I thought that was a really good point that the movie made as well. You guys got anything else? We got a few more minutes, so I don't want to cut us off too soon yet.
For this category?
Or, yeah.
What are your guys' top Brad Pitt movies, specifically focusing on attractiveness?
the hottest Brad Pitt movie. Let's all pick one. I think Fight Club.
I mean, Fight Club, the body shots.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. and Mrs. Smith is a great one.
Wow.
Mm.
That's a good...
No. Taking it back. I'm going with Troy.
Troy. He's wow, so Troy is great. Ripped in Troy.
Mm-hmm. You're welcome, everyone.
Yeah.
Troy's a really good pick.
You should go Moneyball.
No. I'll do long hair Brad Pitt. I'll stick with my World War Z from earlier.
I mean, yeah, that's also a good choice, too.
He's a smart guy, glasses, long hair, mm-hmm. suit, Brad Pitt.
Good mix of intelligence yes. and attractiveness. Yes.
You know what I might say? I might take mine back, and I might say Ocean's 11.
Oh, that's Rusty. A good one. Rusty's, yeah.
Yeah. You don't see any shirtless pictures no. of Rusty, but...
It's good. You're leaving it to the imagination.
Yeah, man, you know, yeah. I've seen Fight Club. I know he can get in sweet shape.
All right, now we got most attractive Morgan Freeman movie. Go.
Yeah.
Dark Knight Rises, just because I love the movie so much.
Bucket list. Something about the colostomy bag.
Oh,
really
I take mine back. I'm going Fury, Brad Pitt.
Fury?
When he's got the undercut.
Ooh. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's a good choice.
That's a good one.
Are there any actual hot Morgan Freeman movies? Did he act, you know, back in the 60s?
How do we feel about him in Shawshank Redemption? Is he attractive in that one?
Pretty cute.
Fun fact, Alfonso Freeman is in the movie, his son.
Is in this movie?
The fingerprint detective.
Oh, that is a fun fact.
Also, there were some other Easter eggs with the other actors.
Oh, really?
The coroner who was looking at the gluttony victim is in House of Cards.
Oh, yeah.
Frank Underwood, he's the barbecue.
Freddy.
Freddy, yeah.
Freddy. And then the doctor is somebody, right? The doctor is seeing the sloth guy. And then the leader of the SWAT team is also in Scrubs.
Scrubs, yeah, California. Yeah.
I liked that there were only like three actors in this movie. Yeah, everyone else was completely replaceable.
Which is perfect.
Yeah.
You just get to know three real well.
Yeah. All right. That's it for this episode. Showrunners is brought to you by the Sidious Mag Podcast Network, the greatest website in the world. This episode was produced by Chris Chavez. Music for the show is Tin Man by Future Islands. Shout out to Reed. He's going to run great tomorrow. Our logo was designed by the talented Kyle Klosinski. Want to tell us what to watch next? I don't care. I ask the guests. Shoot us a message on Instagram and follow at ShowrunnersPod. Thanks for listening. I'm Scott Fauble. See you next time.
Love you.